What ho, good fellows! Welcome to the Disney Film Project Podcast. This here be the show where we discuss forth and bring forth the merriment that comes from the enjoyment of the Disney films. I can't keep this up all night, so I'm just going to probably slip in and out of it. So just letting you know. I am Ryan Kilpatrick, owner and proprietor at DisneyFilmProject.com, where we discuss the films of the Walt Disney Company, be they shorts or features. But on this here podcast, we gather a panel of the finest film buffs ever known to man, and we discuss films of the Walt Disney Company, by the Walt Disney Company, about the Walt Disney Company, near the Walt Disney Company, found on the street by the Walt Disney Company, something in the general vicinity. You get the idea. First up, we have Mr. Todd Perlmutter, who is Chief Technical Officer at DisneyDrivenLife.com and a wonderful blogger at TouringPlans.com. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing great. I just have this to say. Cross the Rainbow Bridge of Asgard, where the blooming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor. There we go.
That was beautiful. I cried.
That's all.
All right, everybody take a moment.
Compose yourself, Ryan. It's okay.
It's beautiful. You touched something deep inside me.
I did that for you, Ryan.
I appreciate that. With us also is the wonderful Brianna Alessio, blogger at Adventures of Bree at adventuresofbree.blogspot.com, and leader of the Chris Hemsworth fan club. How are you, Bree?
I am doing excellent tonight. And how are you, Mr. Kilpatrick?
I am here and ready to strike things with my mighty hammer.
Uh-oh.
The producer of the program, who will probably smite us all with her lightning and thunder gaze, Miss Cheryl Perlmutter. How are you this evening, Cheryl?
I am disappointed in Thor. The future Thor. Not the current Thor, the future Thor.
Disappointed in future Thor.
Oh,
future
no, so
Thor.
We watched the new Avengers cartoon after seeing the movie.
Oh, which, I haven't seen it. Don't spoil it.
Yeah, no, it won't spoil it, but she was kind of disappointed in him, but, you know, it takes place after he's ruling Asgard, which is part of the issue, so.
Okay. All right. So, we'll get to the Avengers cartoon, I'm sure, someday, at some point, when we run out of things, after we do Sharpay's Fabulous Adventure 3.
God help me now.
Yes. So, forsooth, this evening we shall speak forth about the mighty Thor. I can't do that. I like it. I think, by the way, we should start a campaign to have, you know, there's National Talk Like a Pirate Day. There needs to be Talk Like Thor Day.
Yes.
This needs to happen.
This doesn't happen. Absolutely.
Yay, verily. So we are talking about Thor, the film released this May. It is not a Disney film, as we mentioned, but much as we said in Iron Man, Marvel Studios, the company that produced the film, is owned by Disney, so indirectly it is a Disney film, much in the same way that Pixar films of the past are now Disney films. And so that's the logic we're going with. If you don't buy it, sorry. Apologies now. All right, so I much like we do when we discuss new films, we tend to talk about what we were expecting going in. So we all saw the Iron Man films before this. My question to the fine esteemed panel, what knowledge did you have of Thor beforehand? And I'm afraid to ask this to Todd. And then what were you expecting of the film going in? Did you have any ideas or preconceived notions before you started?
Are you directing to me first?
Sure, go ahead, jump
okay.
in.
So I knew a lot about Thor going in, obviously. So here's the thing, right, is really quick, me and comic books is once upon a time a guy couldn't pay my dad money, so he paid my dad in comic books, and all of them went to me. Okay, my dad was an accountant, long story.
And so he worked in medieval times and worked on the barter system.
No, but they were all, well, this was in the 70s, and they were all comics from the 60s, so I had Iron Man and Thor and everything like that, so I had a lot of the original run of Thor from that.
Oh, nice.
And I still do, so... And so these stories, they mean a
Anyone
lot to me.
Anyone who wants to rob my house of these comic books, I will gladly DM you my address so come and I want you to take all the comic books away, and that's all you can take, though.
Yes, that is not
Cheryl,
on the table.
Open the door. Oh, where could the comic books be? Point.
So yeah, I knew a lot going in, and my expectations were that when you have a movie that's about 2 hours in length, I'm not going to get, you know, 40 plus years of Thor, so I have to be realistic about what I'm going to get out of it. And my feeling was that what I was going to get was the important things tied together in some way that they made a little bit of sense with some of the modernization.
Okay. Bree, what did you expect, or did you know anything Thor-ish knowledge?
Okay, well, Confession Thursday, even though this is going to be not released on a Thursday, is that I had no idea that Thor was the God of Thunder. I just thought he was your typical, everyday superhero.
He's our underdog was. That's not a joke.
So, I just went in not sure what to expect, and I actually went with the lovely Alyssa, Nix Nox Nike, on Twitter. Hello, Alyssa. And she loved it just as much as I did. I'm not going to give it a grade yet, of course, until the end, but I enjoyed it.
So you just thought it was just another, like, Marvel superhero movie?
Absolutely. I had no idea it involved mythology. So, like, during the movie, she was kind of filling me in, because she was an expert at that, so she was kind of filling me in about mythology, because I had no idea.
Cool. Yeah, and on my end, I didn't read any of that stuff that you talked about, Todd, the old Thor stuff. I read Thor for a year or two back in the mid-80s or so, just thought it was interesting, and had recently read some more stuff. But not a lot of knowledge of Thor from the comic books, just had read a few here and there. But I knew the basics, I knew the story, I knew who Thor was, I knew who Loki was, and I knew some of the myth behind it. So I actually had really high expectations going into this. I really, from what I could, and part of that too is because of the director. So we'll start with that. Kenneth Branagh is the director of the film. And for those of you who watch primarily Disney films, you've probably never seen most of his work because he tends to do mainly Shakespeare films. Probably his most famous is Henry V, I would say. Would you guys? I'm assuming all of you have seen Kenneth Branagh movies, but us being the movie buffs that we are, Henry V, I would say, is probably his most famous adaptation, but he's done many others.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, Hamlet, yeah. Much Ado About Nothing, you know, lots of different Shakespearean adaptations. He's done a few other films. But none that have garnered much success beyond the Shakespeare movies. And to be honest, the Shakespeare movies haven't been huge financial successes, more critical successes than anything else.
Well, he was in Harry Potter.
Yes. But it's important to note that for Hamlet, like, he was Hamlet and he directed the movie. Right.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, as a director, he hasn't had a whole lot of success financially, I guess I would say.
That's fair.
Yeah, although the movies that he's made, if you haven't seen them and you like understand Shakespeare, you should see there because they're quite good.
Thor would understand
but the fact
Shakespeare.
That he, you know, obviously having directed those Shakespeare. What's that?
I said Thor would understand Shakespeare.
Thor would, verily.
I would love to see that happen too.
You want to see Thor in a Shakespearean film?
I do.
Or Thor watching a Shakespeare film?
Both, actually.
2 hours of Hemsworth in the Thor costume just watching a Shakespeare movie.
right.
Well, people like Breakfast at Tiffany's. What do you want?
There you go. Did he just slam Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
He did. That's not right. I don't think I can take that.
Well, tough.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. All right, let's. We're gonna have to talk to HR about that on the Film Project Podcast HR team. all right, so we'll talk about Thor instead until we can get to that conversation. So Kenneth Branagh is the director, the star, as we mentioned a couple times, Chris Hemsworth, who is, I believe, best known for this movie for being Kirk's father in the Star Trek remake.
That's about the extent of it.
Yeah. He stars as Thor, the aforementioned God of Thunder. However, the film actually opens with Oscar-winning actress Natalie Portman and her crew,
who we would be recognized as Princess Amidala.
In Star Trek, right?
I thought it was Battlestar Galactica.
It might have been, yes. Might have been. of course, Princess Amidala.
Yes.
Or Queen Amidala.
Queen Amidala.
Both.
From the first three Star Wars films, or the second three Star Wars films, or the in-between three Star Wars films, whichever. The three that aren't as good as the other three.
Indeed.
Right. Depends who you ask.
That's true.
Okay. I'm asking people who are breathing.
Oh.
Oh, man.
So, Oscar-winning actress Natalie Portman and her crew of miscreants, Kat Dennings and Stellan Skarsgård, who are playing characters, Darcy Lewis and Dr. Eric Selvig. I'll let you figure out who was whom. Between those two actors. but they are in the desert, and we open the film with them apparently ripping off the beginning of Twister, or not the beginning of Twister, but the plot of Twister, where there's some sort of storm and that they're tracking. It's not 100% clear what Natalie Portman is trying to figure out. They're all some sort of scientists, and they're trying to figure something out, and all of a sudden the storm comes up, and bam, there's Thor.
Yep.
Kind of strange opening, right? When I was watching it in the theater, I'm like, okay, this is odd. So, I mean, it's just a strange way to open the movie, but it causes you to ask questions, which I thought was good, right? Because you want to know why. What is Natalie Portman up to? I'm sorry, I should refer to her as Jane Foster, because that's her character in the movie.
Indeed.
Although, I honestly just kept thinking of her as Natalie Portman. I don't know if anybody else did.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see beyond the actress.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, it's not like her performance. I mean, nothing against her performance. I'm pretty sure it was just as what was called for in the script or whatever. But it's not like her performance was like defining, or, you know, like she created a whole different character or anything.
No, well, her whole reason for taking the role was not because she knew anything about Thor or was interested in playing the role. It was because Kenneth Branagh was directing a superhero movie. She said, I want to be in that.
Right.
That was literally her entire reason for taking the role. She didn't care what the role was or why she was taking it. She didn't even know. I don't even think she knew it was one of the two leading roles until after she already had it.
Right. And I'm not saying that as a slam against Natalie Portman or anything. I mean, it's just like the role itself, and honestly, this was one of my problems with the movie. Like, the role of Jane, I felt like was kind of underserved in the movie.
I don't think they really explained who she was well enough.
Yeah.
I'm just talking, I've watched a cartoon, and they, you know, so they pretty much explain why she's there in the cartoons. But I don't think they explained much of her, other than, you know, what she was doing. They really didn't explain much of her in the movie.
They didn't explain what they're doing, and I don't want to get to that just yet, because there are a few geeky connections that we can save for later. But it's important to note that they did change the character for the movie, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's neither version of Jane, it's none of the versions of Jane Foster that exist, because we have versions where she's, we have versions where she's a scientist, where she's a doctor, and where she's a police officer, right? Those are the three roles that she's played in comic books and animation over the years.
Well, and most recently, she was the most recent version was in a short-lived, very short-lived comic series, Thor: The Mighty Avenger. That this movie actually, well, I shouldn't say the movie echoes that tone. The book was started after the script for the movie was completed, so I have a good feeling that the comic echoes the tone of this film. But anyway, they were very similar, and in that she was more of a archaeologist, and that's
okay.
How she met Thor. So she basically is whatever occupation is needed for the story that's being told at the time.
Right, but they changed the character because she's usually a lot harder and more stern, and this she's softer and has more faith and is less science oriented, which is like a huge shift for the character, because one of the big things that goes on in the comic books is that she never quite believes that Thor is Thor. Now, they do have that in this movie, but I mean, even the Jane Foster comic books, who has seen Donald Blake change into Thor, been married to Donald Blake, blah, 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 seen him die, seen him come back to life, the whole nine yards, she says, you know, she never quite believes it until a certain point. But, I mean, you're talking years and years have gone by at that point.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I say I think the Thor the Mighty Avenger comic, which is really, really good. If you're a person listening to the show and you like the movie and you're looking for a Thor comic, to me, that's the one you need to go find. Thor the Mighty Avenger Trades. It's written by Roger Langridge, who did the Muppet Show comic books. And the Jane in that is the Jane that's in the movie. So I'm not sure, chicken and egg, which one came first or how it all came about. I would assume it the movie script came first and then the comic came from that. But the Jane in that is just like in the movie. She doesn't believe that Thor is Thor, but she's willing to accept it on faith. And, you know, she and Thor's relationship in that comic is very similar to the one in the movie. But we're getting off on a whole other tangent.
Yes, we are.
So Brenna had a really difficult task, I think, with this one. So marrying the Norse mythology and trying to figure out a way to capture the world of Asgard, which is the home of the Norse gods, with the stuff on Earth, because most people are going to care about the stuff on Earth, right? They go into this like Brie, expecting a superhero movie. They want to see Thor in costume on Earth kicking butt. There you go. So in order to – but if you want to get an idea of who the character is, you have to go to Asgard. You have to understand – I mean, part of the whole Norse mythology and everything is the family dynamic and the friends and the warrior culture and all that kind of stuff. And he had to get that across quickly enough to then – you know, he had to put a lot of pieces into play to get us back to Earth to understand who Thor, you know, so that when we got back to Earth after he goes to Asgard, we understand who Thor is and we can move forward at that point. So he had a lot, I think, to cover, and I think did it about as well as it could possibly be done.
Yeah, well, one of the things they had done is as soon as he signed on, Marvel shipped him the entire collection of Thor. Every comic book, well, the collected versions, I have a feeling, not the individual books,
right.
But everything that covered everything that already had been printed, so that he could study up. Okay, and then you're right. He had his problem was is that he liked the concept of Asgard, but he felt that if he presented Asgard as it tends to be presented in comic books, it wouldn't play well to a modern audience. So one of his goals was to choose, you know, color patterns and looks and feels of things we're keeping towards the comic books, but reflecting the fact that this is a modern Asgard, not the pre-modern Asgard that tends to get presented in comic books.
Yeah, the comic books, like, and it's important to say too that the film is based on comic book Thor, not Norse myth Thor.
Yes,
and there's a big difference between those two things.
Although, in the movie, a few times, they reference the Norse myth.
Oh, no, it's definitely the Norse myth, and we can get to that because the entire thing that was created by Stan Lee and Larry Lieber and
Jack Kirby?
Thank you. You're right, the art. What was created by them was heavily rooted in Norse mythology. So right. It is all there, and we'll discuss the bits of that play into the movie.
Yeah, but we say all that to say that the next part of the film basically is the origin story of Thor, right? They talk about we see Odin, his father, how there was a big war against the Frost Giants, how Thor and his brother Loki grew up, and how, you know, what happens is one of them is going to become king, and on the day Thor's going to become king, there's an invasion from the Frost Giants, and Thor rashly leads his friends to attack the Frost Giants, despite what his father says. And Odin, his father, banishes Thor because he's led Asgard back into war with these giants, you know, after many, many, you know, it's assumed hundreds of years, of peace, and he banishes Thor to Earth, which is what we saw at the very beginning of the film. And all of that is accomplished through, I would say, what, 20, 25 minutes of film?
Yeah, it's actually pretty impressive how quickly it is. I think it's like 400 AD is the supposed year when the war actually occurred.
Yeah, I think it's not. Hold on, I looked it up. 965 AD.
Okay. There you go. You know, it's crazy covered because it seemed so long, but then you gotta get a perspective that they actually do spend more time in the modern world than Asgard, but Asgard just seems usually long, and I think they did a real good play with time during that section of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who wasn't, you know, who was going into it for the superhero aspect of it, Brie, what did you think of the beginning origin Asgard piece?
Yeah, I thought that was great. First of all, Anthony Hopkins was completely outstanding in this, I think.
I'd agree with that.
I actually had no idea he was going to be in the film, so it was a nice surprise to see him. No, but it was really good, I think, how they pieced things together. Again, going into it, not knowing Thor's background, not even knowing it was a mythological being, if you will. I liked how everything just kind of wrapped up from the beginning, what was going on, and then which led into why he was, you know, why he landed on Earth and all that. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they did a good job of explaining it. And the other thing I thought that they did really well is that they left it open-ended as to, is Thor a Norse god? Are he and his companions some sort of alien race? Are they, you know, are they just advanced humans? You know, what they left that very open-ended so that if you just weren't interested in the Norse part of things, you could theoretically just write that off and say that, well, it's just superheroes or, you know, aliens or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah, and with Natalie Portman.
I disagree with that one.
Too, you know?
I disagree, because when he draws the map of the worlds, and he draws it like a tree, kind of like a tree with many branches, I could see it as definitely maybe another solar system, whatever. I thought that they explained it a little bit better than the aliens. I mean, like, they, you know, but I can see many people writing that scene off.
Yeah. So the tree that he's drawing is Yggdrasil. Gosh, I hope that part did that one right. But you have to remember, look at what they did in the movie. He makes a very important point, and this plays into what Ryan is saying, is that where Thor comes from, they don't separate science from magic, right? We don't really do that in the real world either. But whatever people can't imagine, they describe as supernatural or, you know, the world Thor comes from, it's just all the same stuff, okay? And so when Thor is drawing the picture of the tree on paper connecting the nine realms, okay, because it's important to note that what he might actually be doing from a scientific standpoint is drawing the wormholes that Jane Foster is actually looking for.
Okay. So kind of like Deep Space Nine-ish.
Right, so imagine you have the center of the universe and there's nine realms and all nine of them are connected by wormholes and you get to them through this thing sitting on Asgard, which will...
Or you can get there other ways, as they implied as well.
There are other ways, because obviously Loki found at least one of them.
Yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, I felt like they definitely implied heavily that, you know, hey, these are the Norse gods, right? But there were people, you know, that there's people who were going to say, well, I don't really care. I mean, like, Norse god stretches the bounds of credulity for me. But they gave you the other explanation as a possibility. I guess that's where I'm going with this. Is so if you wanted to take that out and say, you know, all these are just, you know, advanced beings, you could do that. And they mentioned that a few times in the movie, right? That these could, you know, that primitive cultures could have seen these guys as gods. I think Kat Dennings' character, Darcy Lewis, says that. in one of the scenes. You know, so I feel like they gave you the out to say, you know what, if I can't buy into all this Norse mythology stuff, but, you know, okay, that's one I can take and I can move on. I guess what I'm saying is, like, this concept is one that could have, for a viewer who's going in, who had gone in to see Iron Man, let's say,
yeah,
this concept is one that could have kind of thrown you for a loop, I guess.
Right. It's easier to accept Iron Man because at least you can foresee where technology can go to some degree. Like, you understand how a cell phone works. So when Tony Stark pulls out this cell phone that doesn't exist in modern times, you at least know it's a cell phone.
Right.
Right. You know, but in Iron Man, I mean, in Thor, when he pulls out a hammer and it shoots and it can pull lightning down from the sky and redirect it, you don't really know what to do with that. So you have to, They have to not explain it. They just have to let it be. And they do that very well in the movie.
Yeah. And it's not like Captain America that's coming out later this summer. I mean, you know, it's a guy on steroids with a shield, you know? I mean, it's easy to comprehend. This is a little tougher, and I thought that the way that they explained it did really well. But we get back to – getting back to the story, I mean, when we get back to the point at which the movie started where Jane Foster and her little crew have run over Thor – honestly, and I heard this mentioned on the Film Spotting podcast when they reviewed it, like, from this point forward, it's a comedy almost, right? Because, I mean, the majority of the film, until you get to the climax, is just naturally funny.
Right.
Well, you want to go, Brianna?
No, I was just going to say, I can't help but love the line when her buddy there says, if something to the effect of, if anyone needs me to give him CPR... please let me know.
You're
something to that effect.
Yeah. But here's the thing, right? It's a very – so they've seen this storm from the sky. They've seen this guy sitting in the middle of the storm. They hit him with his car. He's fine.
Right.
Okay. They take him to the hospital anyway, you know, and there's this whole chain of events, and it is funny, right? Yes. Like, there's this whole scene where after they're in the after they get him out of the hospital and he's in the diner and they kind of break away from each other because Eric convinces them that he gets the book of Norse mythology and he convinces Darcy and Jane that this guy is crazy and we need to cut our losses and get away from him before he does damage to us, right? And so he says okay, and he gets up to leave and he starts walking one way, which is not the right way, okay? But he does, like, he goes west and he looks up at the sky and he looks down and you can clearly tell that it's the wrong way, but he walks it anyway. And then later on he figures it out and turns around and starts walking back where he came from, and then he runs into her. I mean, it's like, it's not just comedy, it's sitcom comedy to some degree in the
yeah.
movie. But it's okay, because it seems to play very, it makes the character very endearing, which is strange for a guy with a hammer.
Yes. but it works, right? I mean, it works. The way – and I have to give credit to Chris Hemsworth, right? Because we mentioned nobody knew what this guy did beforehand. To be the lead role in this, he's towing a very careful line of being, you know, big and having that presence, that bold, brash presence, right? He has to pull that off. But he also has to be a character that you want to root for. And the way that he acts at the beginning, you don't root for him, right? The first, that whole sequence we talked about in Asgard, you don't want to root for that character. That's a guy who's, you know, headstrong, you know, I just want to fight kind of guy. And
I know, I was rooting for him against the Frost Giants.
Well, yeah, because the movie's called Thor.
Yeah. What?
Not the Frost Giants and Loki. It might have been a different experience. You don't know.
That would be a lame title, by the way.
Yes, it would. I agree. But, I mean, he manages to imbue Thor with a humor and a zest for life, but also a concern for others that grows throughout the film. Like, you get the arc of the character, even though I don't feel like necessarily in the story itself it's all that believable. Like, if you just took the plot points as they happen, I don't feel like the character growth and the way that he changes from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie is necessarily believable based on what happens in the film. He sells it to the point that he makes it believable. Disagree, agree, anybody?
I agree.
Well, I think it's because he hits that point where up until the point where he's, I mean, I know I'm jumping way beyond what we've already done.
No, that's fine.
Up until the point where he breaks into the shield compound there and tries to steal the hammer for him, back for himself, and he realizes that he's no longer worthy for the hammer, okay? And he's breaking down and he sees the inscription on the side of it. Now, they don't really play the inscription much, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when what the inscription says, right, it's the words that Anthony Hopkins says to the hammer before casting it out of Asgard. Because remember, he cast the hammer out, then he cast Thor out. Right, or the other what they're, or the other way around, but they're separately.
Separately, yeah.
Okay, and he whispers at it, "Whosoever holds the hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor."
Excited when this happened in the Avengers, last episode. The last episode of the Avengers, Hulk tries to pick up, no, the Bee Girl, whatever her name is, the Bee Girl.
Wasp.
Asks the Hulk to pick up the hammer, and he said, "I can't
because I'm not Thor."
Because I'm not Thor.
That's what he says, which is important.
And you see the wording though, and you see the little wording on the
that's
hammer.
Right. And it's like I said, it's important because it's crucial to the character is that there's that separation between what is and is not. And there's a whole history to Mjolnir, which is the name of the hammer. Okay. And for those who, it's actually Mjolnir, but the J is pronounced like a Y, so you say Mjolnir.
Or meow meow as
meow
the,
meow
as what's her name?
That's right, as Darcy calls it, meow meow. What's meow meow?
By the way, I thought was a perfect way to what you just went through of trying to pronounce the hammer and everything, like it, that again, that's a case where it could have been like people going, "What, Mjolnir? What are you talking about?" I thought that was a perfect way to diffuse that just instantly.
Yeah, that was basically Darcy's role, was to diffuse those moments.
I
right?
think so.
That was the thing. You know, another great moment too. They were sitting in the diner, and she goes, "Smile, you're going on Facebook," and he actually smiles for her.
Yeah.
With like egg hanging out of his teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point though, Todd, about like her role in the movie is comic relief, but she also is there to diffuse the moments that could have been less, you know, easily digested, I guess.
Well-written movies often have a character, because this was something Shakespeare did, right? And this is probably why she is the way she is in this movie, because Kenneth Branagh is a Shakespearean actor and director and producer and on and on and on. And in a Shakespeare play, you often have a character who says the things that the people watching the play want to say, or does the things that they want to do, right? It's like the Eddie Murphy, right? When he talks about haunted houses, okay, and how you have people that in a movie with a haunted house, people will go into the house. That should not be the choice, right? That's what Eddie Murphy says, right? You should be walking away from the house, not going in. But this is what people do in movies, right? But there's always that in a Shakespeare play, there'd always be that person who would say, "Why are we doing this? We should be going over here," you know, and that kind of thing. And that's what Darcy's doing in the movie.
Yeah. And she did it. I mean, she did it fabulously. I thought they could. In fact, from what I heard when they did test screenings of the film, people loved her so much they actually put more of her. They had cut some of her stuff out and they put more of her back into the movie, which I think was a great choice.
Cool. But the inscription is important because it's if I was to put any label on Asgardians, and this is going to be slightly geeky in a different direction, they remind me a lot of Klingons, right? Because there's that whole worthiness and honor and duties thing going on, right?
Oh, except there's some things of Klingons that don't apply. But
that's true. But I'm talking the general personality that they wish to put forth, right? Because you have Loki, you have bad eggs everywhere. Okay, so you know there's that whole thing going on, and that's what this is about. Is he's trying to teach Thor that being king is not something you get, it's something you earn. And the Thor at the beginning of the movie to him, it's something that all his whole life he's thinking he's going to get it. Okay? But by the end of the movie, the Thor realizes that he hasn't earned it yet and says, I don't want it as a result. That's the transition that's made. And it's because at that point where he goes to steal the hammer, he realizes that he's no longer worthy, and he has to then expend the next few scenes, like when Loki says goodbye, you know, and on and on and on, that it's he comes to accept his banishment to Earth, and he's just ready to move on at that point because he doesn't know how to become worthy. He doesn't know what it takes.
Right. Yeah, and we should mention, I mean, we talked about he hooks back up together with Jane, and there's a whole thing about the, you know, whether he is or is not Thor and whether Jane actually believes him. But she takes him to try and get the hammer back in this facility where our good friend Agent Coulson from the Iron Man movies has taken over the hammer, and Thor goes to try and get it back, which is, if you saw any of the trailers, this is probably the sequence that you saw the most of. And that actually was one of my disappointments, because like I said, I went to this movie with really high expectations, and I was like, wow, that was like a really cool sequence if I hadn't seen it 3 months ago in the trailer.
But there were some clever things hidden in there.
Maybe that's why our movie guy gave it such a bad review.
Yeah, maybe.
The guy at our theater had given this, we'd gone and seen it. Wait, was it? Yes, we'd gone and seen this. And by the time we see it, they already had put it in the back theater with 3D in like the smallest theater.
It was a week later, and they had already moved it in. It was still 3D, but they moved it into one of the smaller theaters that's like one of the half theaters when I saw it. So it was no longer available on the front screen, even though it was still number one. It was kind of. So I went to the bathroom, and this guy comes in, and he's still cleaning up the theater, and he said to everybody who was in the theater, he goes, this movie stinks, and here's 12 Reasons Why, or something like that. Cheryl was trying to explain it to me when I came back.
Wow. Did he give you, like, a full review before the movie started?
No.
So, if you look in this scene, this is terrible.
No.
I don't know why I made your movie guy British, but I did.
Just for a man of accent.
Although that would have been funny, like, if the guy came in and started a full Shakespearean accent telling you, forsooth, this film doth stink.
It actually would have been even better, too, if he had on a cape and holding a hammer. That would have just completed it.
Yes. That would have been fun. Phil Coulson there is like my favorite character from the movies for some bizarre all these movies. I have a feeling it's going to persist because he's going to be in all of them.
Yes, he is.
And he was a throwaway character in the original Iron Man movie. He was not, but it wasn't until he signed for Iron Man 2 that he made his role pervasive throughout, along with Samuel L. Jackson. And he's awesome. He portrays the character well, and everything he does is like, he's like this masterful technician of plotting things out and just like roll, and he never gives anything away on his face. I mean, he plays this cold but strangely happy person.
But yeah, I mean, I honestly, I've marveled at the way he did this, because we hadn't seen him in anything else before, you know, just the second Iron Man movie. He didn't do a whole lot, but in this one, he plays it so cool and collected, but still funny. Like, that's the thing, is like, you always have a little, he always has that wry smile on his face almost. Even when he's like threatening Thor, he's still funny.
Yeah, well, I enjoy that he's not, in this movie, here's what's different is, in the other movies, he's a lackey, he's not the first in command, but here, for what's going on in this movie, he is in charge.
Yes.
You know, he's the man. Everybody else is just on the phone.
And I have to say, I really did I that sequence. I mean, I know I said that it was given away in the trailer, and that's a complaint more about trailers than it is about the movie itself. That sequence is really well done. We have a nice little cameo from Jeremy Renner, who will be Hawkeye in the Avengers movie.
No, it was awesome because during the movie I go to Cheryl. Hawkeye is like one of Cheryl's favorite characters, and so during the movie I go, Cheryl, you know who that is? I said, watch, he's going to reach for a bow. He's not going to take a gun. Do you know who it is yet?
And wait. I love his line that, you, Coulson, you may make up your mind soon. I'm starting to root for this guy.
But that's what I'm talking about. Like this is a really dramatic. That was a great line. It's a dramatic action-packed scene, but there's a couple of moments in there where they throw in these jokes and they just completely like it's a funny movie. Like I laughed out loud. I don't laugh out loud at comedies, you know, because I'm expecting to laugh. Like, but I wasn't expecting to laugh in this one, and you know, especially when he right before this went into the pet store. And was asking for get me a horse. Or
that was awesome.
And I felt horrible because I was laughing hysterically in the theater in the hospital scene when he's punching the doctors. I'm sitting there cracking up. I felt like a terrible person. And you just can't help it. It was fantastic.
No, I mean it was brilliantly funny. Like it's basically this part of the film is like a fish out of water comedy. Right, I mean, and there's more stakes to it, which I think was great. It's like they put the stakes into it to make it, you know, to drive it forward as an action film. But it's just a fun, you know, it's a character you're kind of rooting for. You know, he's kind of a jerk, but it's okay. You know, he's figuring things out. But then there's that turning point that Todd talks about, where when Loki shows up after this whole scene and tells him, you know, and lies to him about his father being dead and all that kind of stuff. That he makes that change. But, I mean, I brought up Loki. Let's talk about Tom Hiddleston as Loki.
Can I say one? Data from Data looks a lot like Data from Star Trek. I thought, I kept thinking Data from Star Trek. Don't know why.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I've seen the cartoon. I thought it was accurate, but like I said, I kept thinking Data from Star Trek. So maybe too much white. I don't know.
could have layered on some colors. What you're saying?
I think. You should have gone standing booth. I don't know. Maybe a different outfit. I don't know.
Yeah, I could say. But I mean, Branagh had worked with Hiddleston before, and that's how he got the role. So, but I think he just like he captured. We talked about Hemsworth and how he captured the arc of Thor, but Loki has the most, I guess, not the most change, I wouldn't say, but like I would say the actor who was going to play that role was going to have a difficult task, right? Because he's got to go from Thor's compadre, brother, you know, friend, to the most evil person in the world in the span of, you know, an hour and 45 minutes. That's a tough shift, you know? Like, normally we get the villain fully formed, you know what I mean? Like, we get the villain from the beginning and it's, blah, ha, ha, I'm a bad guy, and we move on with life. But he's got to go from being this guy's, you know, brother and best friend to, you know, the evil of the universe in no time flat.
Not really, though. So, the Loki I really thought that he was plotting a little bit, because obviously he had planned this raid into Asgard when Thor was being crowned. So he was, I mean, wasn't exactly villainous, I mean, but he was, you know, obviously doing some stuff
Right. They don't cover what actually is going on, but there's a reason for that. So even without figuring out that he was a frost giant, okay, Loki's plan was to destroy the frost giants to begin with to win his father's favor away from Thor. That was what was actually going on in the movie. It just turned out that there was more motivation for him to do so somewhere along the way. That was the important thing. Now, here is the fun stuff, okay, is Laufey goes... is one of the original characters created by Stan Lee, okay? The funny thing about Trent, and he was actually Loki's father. In the original Thor comic books, Loki was a frost giant, was the son of Laufey, was taken by Odin, just like everything you see in the movie, okay? The funny thing about the transition between Norse mythology and comic books is that when they saw the name Laufey, they didn't realize that Laufey was a female in mythology and actually made him a male when Laufey was actually Loki's mother, not father, in mythology. That's an interesting little twist there from the original stuff.
Okay, then.
Now, here's the important thing, is that they're basically... Thor would not be a successful comic book character without Loki. A lot of people strangely say they don't like Loki as a character, but basically there is no Thor in comic books without Loki. Every single thing that Thor has ever done or fought for, etc., etc., and so on, has been due to Loki. So what they don't get into in the movie, and it's not really germane, but it's interesting, okay, is that the... Mjolnir was originally Odin's weapon, okay? It was made because Loki tried to outsmart the dwarves. And one thing you should never do when it comes to making things, and especially weaponry or armor, is try and outsmart a dwarf, okay? So, because what happens is he commissions, I'm trying to look for the specifics of it, but he commissions them to, here we go. Sorry, folks. I'm actually going to semi-read this. But so the basic idea, okay, and what happens, and this is, I'll give you the Marvel version of it rather than go too into the regular mythology, is he steals Sif's hair. Sif's hair was originally gold, okay, and this all happens in the comic books. And he steals a lock of it, and it turns black, and that's why she's a brunette in the movie, just so you understand that. If you ever see flashbacks, she may be blonde. He promises to fetch a replacement for her hair. I never completely understood that, but I guess make magic hair. Instead, he commissions them to make weapons, okay? So he makes a ship and a spear, and he says, surely they're the best treasures, and then he... And he makes a bet with another dwarf named Eitri, okay, to make that he can't make something better. Okay, now Eitri is this superior weaponsmith, okay, and he goes on to make some strange things. But one of the things that he goes on to make is he's making a hammer, okay, and it's supposed to be a war hammer, okay, which the difference between a regular hammer like what Thor has and a warhammer is just the length of the staff that it's on. Well, what happens is that Loki realizes that Eitri is actually going to really win the bet, so he distracts Eitri's assistant who's making the staff, and Eitri's assistant drops something and the staff ends up shortened, and that's why though Thor has a warhammer, it's actually got a shortened staff like it does. And so that's how Mjolnir comes to be. And it's what I find very interesting is in comic books, it's made from this mystic metal called Uru, okay? His hammer, Odin's spear, and I think two other things are made from this metal. And the idea is that this is the only thing that can hold the Odin force, which is what's in Odin. It's basically the mantle of being the leader of the gods and essentially like the whole universe if you look at it from the movie's perspective. Is, you know, because to me, from the movie perspective, Odin just kind of rules everything, not just Asgard. That was just right. My perspective of it. In the movie, though, they allude to the fact that it was forged in the center of a dying star. Now, here's the interesting thing about that, right? For those that don't know, one of the forms that a dying star can take, okay, and this is where I'm putting on my, you know, science hat here, guys, okay, is a neutron star. Now, a neutron star condenses the entire capacity of a star, like, bigger than our sun, into the size of Manhattan. Okay? So, the entire star, the size of Manhattan, a bit of, just like a cup full of that metal, that substance, okay, would weigh so much that no one could lift it. Which makes insane amount of sense. Like, they actually thought that out to tie it into the movie, because that's why no one else can lift the hammer except if you're worthy and you have, therefore, the magical enchantment allows you to lift it. Okay? I found that to be very clever, because, you know, it's actually, to me, it's explained better than the comic books is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, yeah. And so I really enjoyed that, because, you know, there you are, you have a hammer made out of this, and it's several cups of this, and no wonder why no one can use it. Of course, why it doesn't then fall through the center of the Earth, we won't get into.
No. Don't strain too hard here.
Okay.
It is a comic book movie.
That's right. So, beyond that, though, that's what I enjoyed about the hammer in the movie, is just that I thought it was a better explained item than actually it ever was in a comic book.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what we were talking about, is like I felt like they took pains to really explain everything in a way that you could accept it. If you wanted to accept it scientifically, you could, or if you wanted to just take the Thor approach of, you know, if science and magic are the same thing, you could go with that. You know, I felt like they did that really elegantly, like you said, and just let people make their decision and move on. And as long as you were willing to, you know, just go along for the ride, I think you were in for a good time.
I completely agree.
Yeah. So, but we had talked about Loki and how, and his arc through the film, and you know, during the film, they cut back and forth from what's going on Earth to Loki and how he is slowly taking over Asgard in Asgard. And I think that part is, you know, that part just keeps getting darker and darker and darker. And it goes, you know, like you see Loki and you see the Warriors Three, who we haven't talked about, but they're fabulous, and we see Heimdall and all the things that are going on in Asgard, and it just keeps getting slower, sort of slowly inching towards this horrible conclusion where Thor has to go, where Loki sends the Destroyer to Earth to attack Thor. Which, again, something that we saw in the trailers, that I think that could have been a reveal that they could have left out, but that's a whole other thing about the trailers again. But
yeah.
But the Destroyer on film, which is the giant, you know, robot-looking character who goes walking through town and tearing things up, I thought that was amazing sequence.
That actually reminded me a lot of Klaatu Barata Nikto from the Day the Earth Stood Still, the original one from the 50s.
Not the Keanu Reeves version?
Oh, please, no. God forbid, I didn't even want to mention that version.
I just insulted you, didn't I?
A little bit, I was taking...
I'm sorry.
Actually, it looked more like the Keanu Reeves version, but to me, it brought more of a memory of the original.
Yeah, no, and so the way the character, and I shouldn't say character because he doesn't actually exist as a CGI character, but I mean the way the Destroyer, you know, moves and walks and things, I totally got that same vibe. It was very sci-fi, you know, 50s kind of character, you know, the alien coming down to Earth and walking through the town.
It was also one of those things out of comic books that if ever anything... It's like the Iron Man armor is in the movie, right? It's like, yeah, that's how the Iron Man armor would look if it was in real life. You look at the Destroyer, and if you've ever looked at a picture of him from a comic book, you go, that is just exactly what it should look like.
Yes. You and exactly how his powers would work and, you know, everything. Yeah, they nailed it.
Except for one thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so the Destroyer doesn't just work, it requires someone to possess it to work in comic books. Right?
Okay.
So someone actually has to put their spirit inside of it and like let it animate the thing. So at various points Thor does this, Hulk does this, Sif does this, the Warrior Three, Fandral? Is that
Fandral, Volstagg, and Hogan?
Fandral does it at one point. So that's the only thing that they actually change for the character. Otherwise, that is all the Destroyer is. Runs around, punches stuff, and shoots stuff with its head.
And he does that very well. I want that carved on my tombstone. Runs around, punches stuff, and shoots stuff with his head. yes, the Destroyer. But I mean, that's the moment where Thor becomes Thor again, right? As he sacrifices himself to save the town. Spoiler alert! And he becomes Thor and kisses Jane and has to run off to Asgard to defeat Loki because he's figured out that Loki was lying to him the whole time. But I guess for me, I just want to talk about Jane and Thor's romance for a second. Because, you know, they kiss here, and for me, it felt a little forced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, and I can't remember if it was you, Bree, or if it was someone else, but I think it was you. We were saying, how I was saying before we started talking, when we had first seen the movie, like, I felt like they needed to explain more about Jane ahead of time.
Exactly.
like before the Thor crashes into her life, that we need to know that she was that Thor satisfies two needs in her life, right? The need to understand this wormhole science thing, but also like she needs a guy, you know, or she needs you know what I mean? Like she needs somebody other than these two crazy people that she's palling around with.
That's why I felt a little bit empty at the end when they did kiss, because I think they should have left it with him just kissing her on the hand, because they didn't know each other too well at that point. So for them to all of a sudden just kind of run into each other and kiss was kind of like one of those cheesy early 90s films that you go up.
I don't think she cared.
Well, I wouldn't either, but, you know, I'm just saying.
I think there was probably some stuff cut there between the bar fight that we didn't see and the next morning. I have a feeling there was probably some stuff that they probably decided to leave on the cutting room floor because it wasn't... It might have been interesting, but I'm not sure it carried the plot, which was what they were trying to get across, and less so than the romance, really.
Yeah.
And that might just feed to the problem. They did touch on it, backing up to get Thor out of the compound. They set up a false alias for him.
Yes.
Right? Using Jane's ex-boyfriend's identification, they set him up as Donald Blake. Okay. Now,
Dr. Donald Blake.
Dr. Donald Blake. That's right. Sorry.
To fake doctor school for nothing now.
That's right. So the important thing here is that they say at that point that she has a problem with people she feels she has to rescue, right? They say something along those lines, but it's a quick drop moment.
And yeah, maybe, it's just kind of dropped in. Yeah, you're right.
And that may be part of the attraction there for her also, is that, you know, she sees him as just a crazy person that she can save. But to the Donald Blake thing, so for those who don't follow Thor outside of the movie, is when Thor is originally cast to Earth in comic books, he is forced to live life as a mortal, not just what goes on here, but he is given a body that has a bad hip, okay, and he's forced to use a cane. And when he's in this form, Mjolnir becomes the cane, and he becomes this Dr. Donald Blake is the character, okay, and in order to become Thor, he slams the cane down once on the ground, and he becomes Thor. And initially, he can throw the hammer like he does in the movie, and it comes back to him. But if for some reason he's separated from it for more than 60 seconds, he transfers back to being Donald Blake. And you know, there's a whole host of things about that. That later on, that's eventually an enchantment that's removed from the hammer. I won't get into Beta Ray Bill other than just say Beta Ray Bill, and there you go, and onward. And so that's basically what's going on. So Dr. Donald Blake is this character that was just a moment of nodding to the original comic books where he had this secret identity.
Yeah. Understood. Okay. They do a lot of fan service moments in the movie. Like there's all kinds of little nods to the comics and things. Even me, who was not a big reader. They do a lot of that, and I feel like, you know, you have to do that in these movies now. After Iron Man and after Spider-Man and some of those movies, you kind of have to do that. And they do that a lot in all the movies. I saw X-Men the other day, and they do a lot of it in that, too.
It's like you mentioned about Hawkeye earlier, right? It's like they never say Hawkeye in the movie. You know, if you know comic books, you know that Hawkeye's real name is Clint Barton. They call the character Barton, and he's using a bow. And you know that before he became Hawkeye, he was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. in comic books.
Right.
So you know all this, you know, as a person who reads the comic books.
But the good thing is that you don't have to know that to enjoy that part of the movie.
Absolutely, you do not have to. It feeds people who think a guy with a bow is cool, and it feeds people who want the comic book stuff all at the same time.
Yep. But we get the final climax where and this is where I thought Hiddleston portrayed it really well, right? Because he's become villainous through the course of the movie, but at the end he's trying to destroy the Frost Giants because he wants to impress his father. And he plays that off in the climax of the movie, you know, and Thor is his, you know, heroic self and saves the day, smashes the bridge that so that he cannot get back to Earth, which is supposed to be a tragic ending, and it probably would be if I didn't already know that, and they didn't say in the credits that Thor will return in the Avengers, so I know he's getting back to Earth. So that kind of did take a little bit out of the ending. Like, I think it probably would have been more powerful if we didn't know about all that, but I understand, you know, the business realities of things. But I feel like the climax works not because of the fighting, but because of the emotion between the two characters and the two actors. Like, Hiddleston portraying that, you know, oh, I did this for you, Father, you know, when he's dangling there, hanging from Thor at the very end. And then the look on Hemsworth's face as he goes to smash the bridge and, you know, break it off for the last time. Like, I'll be honest, like, I didn't think the special effects in this part were really good. I didn't think the fight sequences themselves were all that great. But it works because they put emotion into that scene that gives you a reason why these guys are fighting.
Actually, you know what it reminded me of? Is remember when we were talking about Tron and how when you have the father and the son together, mm-hmm. they are like magic on screen, right?
Yeah.
Is really the interactions between Loki and Thor are to me very similar to that. They're really magical and poignant, and the two actors play off of each other well, which makes the two characters mesh really well, and on and on and on. I mean, because even when they're fighting, they're crying and they really do love each other, and it's something that's covered in comic books somewhat, okay, but it's never been touched upon like it is in this movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that the way that they put it back is like the way that, like you said, the way that those two actors play together is golden. And I think, you know, like it, and we can talk about the if you stay after the credits, there's a sequence where we see that Loki is not gone despite the ending of the movie. He'll be back, and he. Either is I wasn't sure if he's invisible or if he's possessing Dr. Selvig. I took it as he was possessing him.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that. We can talk about that scene in a sec, I think, but or we can just talk about it now, I guess. What I think is going on is that Loki has not yet secured a place for himself in Midgard, which is Earth. I am used to saying Thor things in from a Thor perspective.
Yay, barely.
He's not yet found that he's like back on the right plane, but he's not there yet. Okay. I was kind of wondering, because when this happens to him in comic books, it's the Enchantress who gets him out, right? And I don't know if they're going to bring her back in the movie or not. I haven't heard anything about that Avengers, so my guess is that she is not coming going to be part of that movie, but that could change, I guess.
I think that's too much to explain, to be honest.
They got plenty to explain in Avengers. If you've been reading any of the news
I'm saying to add her in as a character.
Yeah.
It has to do a whole bunch of other explaining to do.
It gets confusing because
in her background.
Right, because the man
and why
already
she's doing what she's doing.
Man already has two love interests. He doesn't need his third and fourth love interests that are in the comic book. So there you go.
Thor gets around, man. Thor's got.
All I have to say is I can't. I know I can't spoil Next Avengers for you too much, Ryan. All I have to say is Thor ain't the only one getting around. That's all I'm saying. All
right then.
All right,
stuff going on in the cartoons is what it is. What I'm saying. Okay. So.
Here's the you want to start talking about some of the artifacts we see in the background in the movie from the Marvel Universe? Because that's kind of sort of important to talk about this scene.
Wait, Bree looks really excited to talk about these artifacts right now.
No. The previous conversation, I wanted to make a comment, but I can't, so go on.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Good. When in doubt, do not shout. All right. What's going on here, right, is, like I said, I don't think Loki's possessing him. I think Loki, because he's the trickster, and he just uses magic to put the suggestion into Selvig's head, I don't think he actually is possessing him.
I disagree. but based upon IMDb. I mean,
well,
wait, my conspiracy theory is coming.
That's fine.
Is that he's going to come back?
Here's what's going on, right? Is this moment and that character ties together several characters and several things that are going to go on in the Avengers movie. Okay?
Yeah.
This is why it's important, but all of it starts in the vault of Odin. Okay, this is the important thing, folks. So we're going to jump
into Walt Disney?
No.
No, Walt Disney was not frozen in Odin's vault, by the way.
Although that would have been cool.
Yes, that would have been. And there wasn't, you know what? There was an empty spot in the vault. Something had already been stolen from the vault. That's the first thing you need to catch if you ever watched the scene again, Ryan, is that of all the things, there's actually one that's empty. So something's already missing.
So this is before you get started, because we're about to go uber geek here. I'm going to warn everybody. What Todd's talking about is there's a scene after in the very beginning sequence we were talking about in Asgard, where Thor and Loki are walking through the vault where they keep the casket of ancient winters, which is the thing they stole from the frost giants.
Yes.
And there's little things on the side. You see these different little things, you know, that would mean nothing to you if you didn't know what they were, right? They're just little, you know, magical artifacts, for lack of a better term. But what Todd's saying, and what we will get to, is that these things are going to be very important moving forward. So when you get your Thor Blu-rays in, 2 months or so, this is a scene you're going to want to watch again and again, because there's clues to future things that will happen.
And right. If you're confused, you can currently watch the Avengers cartoon.
Which does cover the Casket of Ancient Winter much better than this movie did.
There you go. Cheryl is pushing the cartoons, people.
Right.
Cheryl is pushing the cartoons.
So, yes. So, like Ryan said, the
hey, Disney, Disney XD. It's on Disney XD.
There you go.
There we go.
So, the Casket of Ancient Winters, okay, in the movie here is actually apparently the source of the Frost Giant's power, okay? When Odin takes the Casket of Ancient Winters, he steals the power of the Frost Giants from Jotunheim.
Jotunheim.
Okay.
You have to have the bellow in your voice like the Frost Giants. You know.
That's right.
You're
absolutely correct. Okay. Here's the thing, though, is this is not germane to comic books. They kind of combined two things and got rid of a character. Okay. Yeah. It's not important, but just so people don't get confused, this is their own version of this for the movie, because there's a whole different character who uses the casket for a whole set of different things. The Casket of Ancient Winters actually puts out the cold of the region of Hell. Okay? It's in comic books. It's not the Jotunheim. But what's really cool is, if you remember, we talked in Iron Man about Jarvis being the butler of the Avengers and not actually a computer in comic books. Well, he was in Ultimates, he's a computer, but in the comic books that I grew up with, he was actually a physical butler. Is when Thor actually takes the Casket of Ancient Winters away from Malekith the Accursed, who's actually the person who uses it in comic books, he gives it to Jarvis, because this allows Jarvis, who is at that point an old man, to actually get younger, because that's one of the side powers of the casket, is it gives its holder or owner the ability to grow younger. That's just an important thing. Yes, but you didn't know that. Other things that you see in the vault, though, there are two interesting things. One of them is actually called the Eye of the Warlock, but it's been mistaken online for being the Eye of Agamotto, which is the eye that Doctor Strange uses. They have clearly said that this is not the Eye of Agamotto, for anyone who's a fan, just so you know that. They are considering a Doctor Strange movie. That is not the Eye of Agamotto. That's all you need to know. The other thing that's in there, though, is... What?
I'm crushed.
Well, but more importantly, the other thing that's in there is a certain gauntlet. Do you know what gauntlet that is, Brian?
That would be the Infinity Gauntlet, sir.
It is, in fact, the Infinity Gauntlet. So the Infinity Gauntlet...
I so knew that.
It has on it 5 gems, and those gems allow are the powers that allow you to tap into the universe. One is mind, one is power, one is soul, one is time, and the 6th one, which sits on the back, Sorry, there's space and then there's reality, which is the big one that sits on the back. So that's actually the gauntlet. That's actually going to play into the Avengers movie, just so everybody knows that. What you see at the end of the Thor movie that Nick Fury is handing off to Selvig to investigate, okay, is an object called the Cosmic Cube. Okay, now this ties together so many things because this is actually going to be what the Red Skull is creating in the Captain America movie, I believe. And I'm sorry, I know I'm spoiling things, but not really. This is
in
not
theory. In theory. Yeah, it's widely rumored that that's what the right. object is in the Captain America movie. That was my first thought when I saw this
right.
little thing.
And so the idea is that when because it's not S.H.I.E.L.D. at the point when they're going to capture it, but it's going to be captured and it's going to be brought forward like this. And here's why. The Cosmic Cube is actually tied to the Infinity Gauntlet because it's actually not a separate power element, but it actually taps into the Reality Gem on the back of the Infinity Gauntlet. It's actually a conduit to it using probably, I'm going to bet in the movies, if I was to explain it in the movies the way they've explained other things, probably using some kind of wormhole space-time thing. Just my theory.
That's what I always use.
That's when in doubt, use a wormhole.
No, a wormhole space-time thingy. Yes,
I have one of those in my back pocket, always.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
It's you, Sassy.
And there's other things in here. I don't think they're important because I don't know how they're playing into the movies, but I want to mention those things. The other important thing is there's a point in the movie where we discussed already where he's giving the alternate identity of Donald Blake to Thor so that he can get out of the S.H.I.E.L.D. compound. Before that, there's a scene where they're talking about how they can get in and rescue Thor because this is something that Jane wants to get Selvig's help with. Okay, and he mentions that he's had a run-in with these guys before because he had a friend who was investigating gamma radiation, who then went missing, and that's a reference to Bruce Banner who is the Hulk, okay? Because the Hulk is based on gamma radiation, but there's another drop in there that they actually cut out of the movie, okay? And that was he references that he's going to contact a friend.
No, they left that part in. They didn't drop that part out.
Dropped who the friend was,
yes.
Okay? So the friend, however, was supposed to mention Henry Pym, okay? But they felt that it would, at that moment, with them dropping Hulk and dropping Donald Blake at the same moment, they figured that they didn't want to also throw Henry or Hank Pym in there at the same time. So they dropped the name mention, even though that's who they're referencing. Now, Henry Pym is Ant-Man or Giant Man. Or whatever he had, or Yellow Jacket, or whatever happens to be going by at that time. Also an Avenger, but at this point in time, he would be doing field research for S.H.I.E.L.D. and actually be working for S.H.I.E.L.D., though not an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So my theory is that Henry Pym was the reason that they had let Thor out so easily as Dr. Donald Blake, because they knew it was a fake in the system.
Sometimes, Cheryl, when you want to find something out, you let the horse lead you to water rather than lead the horse.
Yes, but okay. My theory was that because he said he was going to contact the guy, I think because Ant-Man was on the inside, or whoever this guy was on the inside, told Coulson, just let it float. Or even Nick Fury let it float. Because again, he meets Nick Fury at the end. So
here's the thing, right? They know that somehow, whether or not this guy, Coulson's trying to figure out who Thor is, right? All he gets back is Donald Blake, which he knows is fake. Because it kind of like randomizes up on the screen while they're looking up his identity. All of a sudden, he's got an identity in like 3 seconds. There's this moment where he knows when Thor is approaching the hammer that something is going on. So he knows somehow there's a connection between the two. He just doesn't understand what it is. So he's hoping that letting him go, he can have the agents who he sends to follow him, okay, tell him what's going on. Instead, the destroyer shows up.
And then and the agents say, oh, wait, there must be a Renaissance fair in town. Oh, wait, now we might want to call Coulson.
That's right. Yeah, you know what? This is a good time to talk about the Warriors 3, because we didn't talk about the Warriors 3 too much, Ryan.
No, we did not.
So since it came up, since they just appeared on the scene and from Cheryl's point of view, let's talk about them.
About Fandral, Hogan, and Volstagg.
Volstagg.
I can help that. They're not really, I mean, they mention their names in the movie, but frankly, they don't even, they're like Thor's amazing friends from Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends, the old cartoon, right? I mean, like, the only reason there's three of them is because that's the way it was in the comic books. Like, really, the purpose of these guys was just to be Thor's buddies in Asgard who have to come to Earth to get him, right? They're plot devices more than characters, is the way they're used in the movie. And that's fine, I mean, because there's tons of characters in the movie, so... You know, it's okay, but the Warriors 3, as I mentioned, Fandral, played by Stuart Townsend, Hogan, played by an Asian gentleman whose name I will not butcher, and Volstagg, played by Ray Stevenson. And, I mean, you know, like I said, they're fun characters, but there's nothing much to them in the movie, right? I mean, they were fun to watch, but they weren't exactly like, you know, award-winning Academy performances by any means.
Well, they were, I think their job, and they performed it well, was to keep us and Thor apprised of what was going on when Thor wasn't there.
Yeah, they're narrative devices more than characters.
Yes, I mean, other than the one scene where we see him back and saying, "Oh, I saw this. I slayed this. I did that." The big guy, whoever his name was, I lost
Volstagg.
Who's who?
Yes. Volstagg.
Yes, so we see him back and relaxing for the minute, and then
it's Volstagg.
Yes,
that's right. You have to pronounce it properly.
But strangely, the most changed of the three characters from the comic books.
Yes, because he's not a giant fat person.
A giant, yes, a huge. So in comic books, he's this super good fighter, but he's just huge. I mean, he's like, you know, the hugest person you've ever seen. So times three. That's
with
how
these tiny little legs.
I think this plays a little bit better because it makes the warrior aspect a little bit more believable. But at the same time, they don't do anything to downplay the appetite. I mean, in comic books, this guy always has a sword in one hand and a turkey leg in the other.
They tried.
Yeah. He would be at home in Frontierland.
Yes.
Volstagg.
You know. What's interesting is in the upcoming Three Musketeers movie, he's playing Porthos, the same actor. Also a big guy with a weapon in his hand.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe lots of men would enjoy that. Being the guy with the weapons. So that's the Warriors 3. We also did not mention Heimdall, who is probably gets the best lines in the movie, I would say, outside of the two main characters.
Yeah, I mean, he has, it's an interesting take on the character because he's, in the comic books, one of the things they did is they patterned the character after the British guards who stand outside the Queen's Palace. Right, is mm-hmm. you know the I always forget what they're called. The
palace guards.
Yeah, but the
beef eaters.
Thank you. The beef eaters. They're supposed to be stoic and not show any emotion, and that was one of the things that they put in the original comic book character. And what I like with the character in the movie is that he's a little bit more loose than that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, he's a bit more. He seems a bit more approachable and forthcoming, you know. I mean, it's kind of tough when you see the whole universe at once to kind of sort of put things into perspective, but I think he's got a good way of looking at things, literally.
Yeah, nice. No, I mean, I think they did a really great job of making that, like, because he's just supposed to be a character who stands there and watches stuff, so, I mean, he's not really that compelling, but they gave him a couple cute, funny lines and, you know, made him a nice fighter, too, at the end, so... I thought that was good.
Talking about weird fighters, did anyone notice who Frigga was?
Rene Russo.
Yes.
Playing Thor's, in this version, mother, but in the mythology, a stepmother. She wasn't really in the movie more than like 5 minutes.
No, but agreed. But I didn't recognize her. I didn't recognize her. for
what they needed for her, for her screen time, she was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, she did fine. I mean, I think that's the thing, is, like, this movie had a really good cast of characters, but they made the right choice in keeping it mainly focused on Thor and Loki. And those two actors, who were probably the least decorated of the cast, I felt they pulled it off and made it believable. So, I mean, it was kudos to them for that. And kudos to Branagh for taking the chance on those two, and Marvel for taking the chance on these two actors, and, you know, putting them in those lead roles. I thought that was a bold choice for a movie that frankly had to succeed, right?
Right, because if it doesn't succeed, then nothing that comes afterwards really works.
Yeah,
because here's why. Remember I mentioned earlier how Odin in this movie is portrayed as not just being the king of Asgard, but the king of everything, right? Mm-hmm. Is if you look through the history of the Marvel Universe, there are only two characters who touch literally everything, okay? And they are Thor and Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
okay? Everybody else just kind of somehow connects. Like, if you want to be, you know, you joke about 6 degrees of separation, or we talk about like the Star Wars connection here, right, and stuff like that. It's when you talk about comic books, is everyone is connected through Thor or Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe. Every story somehow connects back to them, and on and on and on. I mean, there's even this thing where Loki owes, because Loki's, Spider-Man saved Loki's daughter, right? He owes Spider-Man a debt of gratitude that Spider-Man has yet to collect on.
You know, he did. He collected on that.
Oh, yeah. He did collect on it. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
It was about 6 or 7 years ago. It's okay.
Okay, I haven't read Spider-Man 6 or 7 years, so there you go.
I understand. That's why I'm letting you know.
That's fine. But you know, so it's things like that where they it all goes back to those two characters. So without Thor, there really isn't an Avengers. Yes, Iron Man tends to be the leader of the Avengers, or Captain America as well tends to be the leader of the Avengers. But without Thor in the center of it all, it just all falls apart.
Yeah. No, that's true. Sure.
So one of the interesting things is that Thor's original appearance in comic books was in Journey into Mystery number 83. Okay? Not a comic book I own, by the way, people.
Not yet.
Okay. No, seriously. So what they did in the movie is they actually brought this to the movie for like a really brief second, is when you're entering the city in New Mexico. Which is interestingly, the movie takes place in New Mexico, in case you missed that. It said, there's a sign that says New Mexico, Land of Enchantment, which is actually the real catchphrase for New Mexico. But then it also says Journey into Mystery, actually plays a little homage there to that. So one of the interesting things I liked when I was reading stuff was Stan Lee had always envisioned himself playing the role of Odin in any sort of Thor movie that might come about, because he pictured himself as being Thor's father because he helped invent Thor and put him in comic books and on. But he felt that if it couldn't be him, that Anthony Hopkins was the perfect person to be playing him, without a doubt in his mind. So I thought that was nice, because I really don't, no offense to Stan, but I couldn't imagine him as Odin, not after having seen Anthony Hopkins do it. And
yeah.
The other interesting thing I thought also about Anthony Hopkins is that there's this moment after the initial argument when they come back from Jotunheim, and they're having an argument between Loki and Thor and Odin, right? They're having this semi three-way argument because Odin's trying to sway Thor, to sway Odin to not banish Thor, and he knows but he's really trying to get him to banish Thor because that's what he really wants. And the whole thing is going on, and Odin sees right through Loki, but he's going to push through and banish Thor anyway. But the argument that they have okay, is completely ad-libbed. Okay? It was a moment where Branagh felt that he needed it to be genuine, and it wasn't going to, because it was a family moment, and they all knew the characters and they all had read the script, but he kind of told Hopkins to drive the moment and not recite the script and see how the other guys reacted. He didn't tell the other guys this was going to happen.
Oh, interesting.
So I kind of like that. And the other interesting thing is, did you know that Tom Hiddleston actually tried out to be Thor first?
I did read that, yes. Okay. I don't think that would have worked.
No, but apparently, though, is here's the funny thing. So Helmsworth actually beefed up incredibly to play the part, right? He was actually not a big guy, because if you look at him in the Star Trek movie, he's actually just tall and lanky. Okay.
Lanky. I like the lanky.
He is. Look at what George Kirk looks like in a uniform, and you can, tall and lanky is a good description.
Ladies and gentlemen, are 12 years old, just reminding you all.
Okay. I didn't say tall and hanky, I said tall and lanky.
No, I'm just saying.
But he apparently just ate like just tons of protein and on and on and on, just to put on lots of weight, and then he started going to gym. He never went to a gym before he got this role, for example. So Hiddleston, on the other hand, went the other direction. He was actually bulky, but not like the right, not the height they wanted, which was half the reason why they picked Helmsworth. But because Loki, he wanted Loki to have this, when he got the character, he wanted him to have this feeling of not just being thin, but also looking like he was constantly hungry and wanting more. So that's why he got the gaunt look on his cheek. So he actually dieted to a point of having that look about him. So, it's a very interesting movie to read about and stuff like that. So I highly, you know, we'll make sure you guys have plenty of links to read when you check the show notes out. And that's it.
No, I mean, I think overall, it's just, I wasn't I guess what like I said, I went in with really high expectations, but I wasn't expecting the movie to be as fun as it ended up being. You know, I mentioned how comedic it was and all that kind of stuff. I was expecting something, you know, serious and tragic and, you know, Shakespearean, right? Because Kenneth Branagh is the director. And when I got, I was very excited about it. You know, I thought, you know, it just played really well. So, what would you say, Mr. Perlmutter, with all the geek love that's packed into this movie, how are you going to rate it?
So I put a lot of thought into this, because here's the thing. I saw both Thor and Pirates the same day. So because I saw them back to back, I really kind of compared them all, and I really liked and enjoyed this movie more than I enjoyed the Pirates movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean this.
Oh boy, you guys were mean on that movie. Just saying.
Well, no, I mean, none of us rated Pirates low. We rated Pirates pretty good.
You crushed our guest. That's all I have to say.
Well, John will forgive us. It probably wasn't the best pirate movie to have a person who loves pirates on, but anyway,
yeah, I love pirates, and it hurt me, it pained me. Yes. But this is not that movie.
I love this movie significantly more. I actually, to be honest, because I like the character better than Iron Man, I actually like this movie better than I like the Iron Man movies.
Wow.
Okay. So, I mean, not that I dislike the Iron Man movies, because I mean, let's face it, they are really good movies. But there's just something about this movie where it felt great throughout. I mean, I never had a moment where I was really, you know, everything, it was exciting. I said earlier, I felt that it was designed to not just feed comic book geeks like myself, but also feed people who don't know as much, or don't know anything, or didn't know Thor was a Norse god, and
right,
you know, and yet people still walk out of this movie and they can like it, and this is going to get them pumped to see something like Avengers. Okay, that's how I kind of looked at it. I mean, there's no reason why this movie isn't going to. It just encompasses. It's made for anyone who watches it. That's what I really enjoyed about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I'm actually going to give this one of my higher ratings. I really enjoyed this, and I'm going to give this a 4.
Very good. Very nice. Nicely done, sir. Brianna Alessio, you have to separate the rating for Hemsworth from the movie itself. I'm just saying.
Well, let me start out by saying, while y'all were geeking out on me, I was out on a date with Chris Hemsworth. He says hello, by the way.
Awesome.
Actually, by the way, Chris Hemsworth, if you are listening, call me. Anyway, okay, in all seriousness, I really enjoyed this. My favorite of the Marvel films, and I agree with Todd. I actually thought it was better than Iron Man and Iron Man 2. I'm not a big fan of Iron Man 2 to begin with. I like the first one better anyway. But I don't know, it just seemed to have more of a sturdy plot, better characters, I don't know. So I'm actually going to give this one a 4.5.
Oh, very good, very good. I am going to give it a 4, like Mr. Perlmutter. Since we're comparing it to the other Marvel films, I actually like the first Iron Man a little bit better, just because I like Robert Downey Jr. a little bit better, and I felt like that it works a little better there. But I mean, this is right up there with that. I think Thor, I saw it twice, so I saw it in the theaters twice, and I think it got better the second time, which is the sign of a movie that's got a lot to it. You know, because some movies can be really thin in the plot and you just enjoy them a lot in the theater. But I think this one, there's a lot hidden in there and there's a lot of character development between the two main actors that I thought was just wonderful. So I will give it a 4. So that's a pretty solid rating from this crew for everybody to give high ratings.
Me, me, me.
Yes,
four,
ma'am.
4.5. I'm with Brie. I think it did much better than I didn't see Iron Man in any of those, but I think it did pretty well doing what I mean describing everything, having the books in there for us. I think that was a cool little trick that they did, stopping and looking at the books and showing us the books about Thor's day and stuff like that. So I'd have to say 4.5. That's because they did their research too.
Yeah,
Thor's a win.
There we go. So that is Thor, ladies and gentlemen. Our take on the film. I know you have a take, so leave your comments in the post that will go up on Disney Film Project about this movie. You can leave your comments about what you thought about Thor. Let us know. You can go to the website at DisneyFilmProject.com where you can listen to the show. You can find the older shows. You can do all kinds of fun stuff like that. You can leave comments for us. You can like us on Facebook or fan us on Facebook or, you know, follow us on Facebook or just go to Facebook and find us. We're at Facebook.com/DisneyFilmProject. You can
say
follow
hi,
us on
it's
Twitter.
It's okay to post on our page.
Yeah, please do. Say, hey, what's up, y'all? You know, come on. You can follow us on Twitter at DisFilmProject. You can, let's see, which of our 700 blogs we go to first? I'd say DisneyDrivenLife.com. You'll see some film reviews from myself there because of the fine work of Mr. Perlmutter and his technical wizardry there. You can see Todd and myself writing on touringplans.com. You'll see Bree at Adventures of Bree at adventuresofbree.blogspot.com. And what we ask of you, if you've enjoyed the show, you go to iTunes, you leave us a review. It says, hey, I like this show. And then other people who want to find out more about Disney films, they will find the show
and
they will listen.
And we do read our reviews. I've read all the reviews that are there, so.
I just have to say, like, nay, love. Sorry.
That would be a great way to start the review. Just saying. Throwing it out there. All right, so there we go. We have reviewed Thor. We have told you where you can get in touch with us, and we will let you know about our next film. On the webpage. You can always go to DisneyFilmProject.com and see what the next movie is that we are going to review. So, until next time, I say thee nay, or, okay, fine, whatever. See you next week, folks.
Go hither, forth and be and merry.
Hither, tither, and yawn.
Hasta la bye-bye.